Micah, hello.
Hi, hello.
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 This is crazy. I have all of the podcasters that I podcast with on a regular basis on the same line at the same time.
In both of your ears.
Yeah. Are you promising not to team up on me?
Oh, that's why we're doing this.
Oh, crap.
Dan and I already talked about it. We've got a
Yeah,
bit.
we're gonna fight. We're gonna arm wrestle and then see who wins.
Well, that's no good. So, Dan, would you like to go live?
Sure. We don't need to do any other preparation.
Do we need to do any other preparation?
30 minutes, right?
Sure, in and out.
Yeah.
Done. All right, I'll turn the thing on now.
Alrighty.
I assume you have some sort of pithy toot prepared.
Things will happen. Don't worry about it.
Pithy toots.
The broadcast is on.
The heat is on.
If
So.
I was a jazz music player, I would be called Pithy Toots.
Okay. I assume you're some sort of horned instrument.
I don't think that's any of your business, Dan.
You would be a
Fair enough.
flautist.
Yes, yeah, that's probably best. Pithy
Those are
toots, the
those
flautist.
little things, like the chicken wrapped in tortillas that get deep fried.
Yes, exactly like that. Only this one makes music.
You could make music with a, what are they called?
Flauta?
Flauta?
Yeah.
Flauta?
Flauta.
That is a very Americanized way to say that, flauta.
Well, we're Americans.
True. This is true. Wait, is
So,
this live?
yes.
Oh God.
No, so Micah, now that you're on the thing and stuff, and you picked a movie, you picked something quite unexpected. Well, actually, I should rephrase that. I didn't know what to expect, but you picked something very unusual. So you want to tell us about your selection?
Yeah, it is an unusual flick. I picked Kingsman: The Secret Service. I was trying to think of something that I actually enjoyed and also like had. There's a lot that can be discussed about the film, because it's odd. It's definitely odd. I mean, you've got Samuel L. Jackson with an interesting lisp and just a lot of questions I ended up having at the end. But for some reason, I just very much enjoyed the movie despite myself, I think. There's some bits in it, and we'll talk about it. But I like this film, and I was curious to see how both of you who have opinions on things and stuff would take this flick. So that's why I picked Kingsman: The Secret Service.
Okay.
Well, neither of us have ever seen this movie or any footage from it ever before, right, Joe?
Well, I can only speak for myself, so I can say no, I haven't. But Dan.
I've seen this movie a lot of times, and I've seen certain portions of this movie probably hundreds of times
Oh,
because
wow.
I got to make some visual effects for this movie. Way back in whatever year this movie came out, 2014.
In as much as you can say, without revealing too many of your industry secrets, what did you work on?
I worked on the final fight scene between the character known as Gazelle and Eggsy, where the Casey and the Sunshine Band song is playing, which is actually a great fight. I love watching it because it's way more fun to watch when you get the music and all the shots together instead of just some really weird anamorphic footage in Alexa log space on loop.
Oh yes, those Alexa log spaces. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
It's an anamorphic movie. It's a really weird anamorphic movie too, because they use a lot of crazy wide angle lenses and everything's all bendy and stuff. There's some very interesting choices in the cinematography in this movie.
So can you tell me what anamorphic means?
It means the lenses on the front of the camera squish the light coming into it so that when you unsquish it, you get an image that is twice as wide as it is high.
Oh,
So
okay.
it's a way to get a nice big wide screen cinematic style format without actually having to crop stuff. You're squishing and stretching light.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's a terrible explanation for it. Everyone's going to yell at me for that, but that's roughly what it does.
That's the best way to explain it to someone who has no effing clue what any of it means, probably. I mean, I can't judge and be like, no, that's wrong, because I totally wasn't testing you. I have no idea. You could have been like, anamorphic is when they have claymation animals in the background, and I'd be like, okay, yeah, that's anamorphic.
It's when there's anamorphs, and when people roll out there and turn into animals, and then they turn back into human beings, right?
Yes. Joe, you don't agree?
No, that's fine. It's as good as explanations we'll get. Yeah. So, Dan, do you want to offer up any other info?
About anamorphic in particular?
Yes, like like the reality of the situation, or like no. Nothing?
About the reality of what situation?
About anamorphic.
You're going to have to be more specific. It's fine. It looks weird.
Is it a bad thing? Oh, man. Is
no,
this
it's
like...
not a bad thing. It's just, I mean, aside from the fact that it takes the images and stretches it back out, it sort of doubles the focal length horizontally of the lens that's on there. So it creates these really, really wide angle looking things. And if you already had wide angle lenses on in the first place, you get these really absurdly like curvy lines that are supposed to be straight, which you see in a lot of the, probably the first scene that like really throws me off is when they first meet at the inside the Kingsman store. Mm-hmm. And everything is just super fisheye lensy looking, but you know, everything in the center of the screen looks nice.
Is that why on the edges, like whenever he's in the office and he points at one of those Sun articles, that's why it's blurry? Like the article in the corner of the screen is blurry because of these weird shots?
It's certainly a contributing factor.
Okay.
But that wouldn't be necessarily because it's anamorphic. It might be because of that particular lens might have some peculiarity to it that throws it out of focus, or it
yeah,
could be
also most anamorphic lenses are like 50 years old, so they're all soft and weird anyway.
Yeah, but anywho, it's certainly an interesting looking thing, an interesting looking beast to dissect. But some of us can't stand the sight of blood, so we should probably approach this movie very carefully.
Are you? I'm confused.
Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, I'm feeling really kind of attacked. Isn't the right word? That's not it. I'm feeling like there are some. What's the word? I feel like you're kind of because I'm a guest. You're being very nice, and we're like starting by talking about the movie. And really, I'm just here, you know, to have the first 30 minutes of a normal defocused episode where it's just like you talking about the weather and the food you ate that day.
Oh, you want to talk about food? Oh God, we can do that. I had some pizza and some hot wings.
I've been, you know, waiting to talk to you about the fact that my humidity in my office is at 50% and it's currently 73 degrees.
Ooh, that sounds very pleasant.
Temperature rising because I have the oven running. I'm about to have at 9 p.m. some chicken and rice that I'm currently baking in the oven. And yeah, I feel like... It's not an episode.
Are you going to take a break to go take your chicken out of the oven?
No. Luckily, Shane is here to do that for me. But
actually, I should have known either that or you probably have some sort of workflow on your iPad that'll turn your oven off, right?
Yeah, exactly. I've got a Quadro system set up where I just tap a button on my iPhone and then it dings a bell in the living room and my dog knows that it needs to hop up on top of the counter and brush its nose against the the little dial that flips the oven off.
It's like sending out a high-pitched signal that can makes the dog's brain go into a weird mode that makes it do things. But before we get too far along into the movie, Joe, how's your temperature and humidity? Because you bought a Dingus too, didn't you?
I did. I have the recommended Therm Pro, and it's here with me right now, right this very moment. It is 36% humidity, and it is 91 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh my God! What has happened to your home?
Oh, well, see, the AC wasn't on because I wasn't here. And because I've only been here for 30 minutes, when I ran it didn't cool off anything.
Hold on. So,
yeah.
Follow up. Mm-hmm. Did you... Okay, maybe this is like a thing that happens where you live. I will never... understand, except maybe you will help me understand, the whole idea of not having the system running while you're away, and then you have to come back and run it like extra high for 7 hours in order to get it cooled back down again. I have, and maybe it's because I have to check my privilege at the door here with my central heating and cooling, but like it's set to a threshold. So if it gets above a certain temperature in the house, it automatically drops back down, and below a certain temperature, it heats things up. And then it knows, this of course is the smart dingus part of it, it knows when I'm away, and so those temperatures, that those thresholds are a little bit more extreme, but still within the bounds of like, it's not like I come home and we have to run it for 3 hours at maximum values to get it cooled down in the house. So is that a normal thing? Like you walk in, it's 120 degrees, and the first thing you do is like grab the knob and turn it and get things cool?
Well, there's no knob on this one. It is all digital. But the problem is I live in a very old building in Los Angeles, a city where the weather is supposed to be perfect. At all times. It is not. But this window unit is embedded in the wall. And its wiring consists of a plug that goes into one outlet. And that outlet is not on the fuse box that I have in my apartment, but on some other fuse box that I don't have access to. So when I would run this thing on an automated, the eco mode, where it sort of cycles on and off, when I would run that during the day, I would come home sometimes and it would be dead. Because the connection that it is connected to would no longer be functioning. And then I'd have to call my landlord, and the next day or the day after, that would get reset. Yeah, so it is not something I look forward to doing, where I set that and then come home and find out I don't have any AC that night. So this is the world that I live in. But it only affects me when I'm also here, because most of the time I'm over at my boyfriend's apartment, so I don't need to be running the AC while I'm not doing that. It keeps my electrical bills surprisingly low.
I have some follow-up questions.
Yes.
Is the breaker box in somebody else's apartment, or is it in like a hallway or like a janitor's closet somewhere?
It's below the stairs.
I literally have no idea where it is, but I flipped every switch that's inside my fuse box and it does nothing. So I have no idea how it gets reset. It's just, he comes out, he does it, and he leaves. And I haven't been here to witness it.
You don't watch him?
You don't ask him where it is? Be like, hey, man, so you don't have to come out here every time? Just tell me where the breaker is?
No, he's always come when I've not been here. Because I've been at work.
No, just like when you talk to him, be like, just tell me where it is. I'll go do it.
No,
take a photo, email it to me, ARKit it.
No, he doesn't. Okay, let me explain my very old landlord. He does not do that. He just comes out and he does it whenever he feels like it. And as far as I know, he doesn't actually enter the apartment to do it. So I think it's something external, but I don't know what it is, because it's obviously hooked up to the meter, because it's my electrical bill. So it's somewhere out there. There is some knob or switch or something that this can apparently overload. So that's cute. But when I mentioned this to him, his only thing was, oh, you shouldn't be running the AC when you're not home. And I'm like, excuse me? That's not really an answer that I need. But whatever. You know, I'm capable of surviving. You know, our ancestors did it before us. But yeah, 91, no bueno.
It's too hot. It's too hot is what that is. So I think the next thing we need to do is crowdfund you a smart plug so you can turn it on before you leave the office or whatever, wherever you are, and then come home to a nice, cool apartment.
But see, I don't even think it works that way, because it's like a special appliance plug, and it's not actually like off because it's a newer thing. It's like an energy saver mode. So I don't know if I just plug and unplug, like switch style, whether or not that will actually turn the unit back on, or whether it'll just be like, nope, I'm ready to be turned on now.
Yeah, if it doesn't have manual controls, then it might just, it might just power on and be ready for you to touch its buttons. It doesn't have a remote?
It does have a remote. And
it does or does not?
It does. It does. And you sent me the Sensibo remote control IR blaster thing that can do it by app, but some of the reviews that I was seeing for the app are not very good, and it's not compatible with HomeKit. So if I need to trigger it when I'm not home, then I have to use the app, and the reviews for the app are bad. But
let me stop you there. Yeah. If it's the difference between a not great app experience and a 90 degree home when you arrive, you buy the thing with a not great app experience. Well, it's not even a question.
No, it's $110, and sometimes the app doesn't work is the response, because what it's doing is it's blasting a signal out to say, hey, turn on, or hey, turn off. It has no access to what the state of the device is, so people would come home and find out it didn't trigger, apparently. So I'm skeptical of that one. There's another one by Broadlink that also does something similar, but it's also suitably crappy. It doesn't integrate with anything, and that one's only $20. And then there's the Logitech Harmony Hub. That one is also not on HomeKit, but it has compatibility for ACs. Apparently, there's a weird thing with the way they designed it, because it wasn't originally supposed to control ACs. It's supposed to just be doing your entertainment center. So sometimes people would turn on their TVs and it would turn off the AC because it'd be switching task modes or whatever. So that's cute. But that one's only $8.
Okay, I have another thought.
Right,
here's what you do. Mm-hmm. You get two smart plugs. One of them goes for the AC unit. Another one goes to an electrically powered, one of those little ducks that dips its beak in the glass of water. And then you position that strategically over the remote, so you trigger the thing to turn the AC on, and then you trigger the duck to push the button to blast your remote at the AC unit to turn it on for you.
Yeah, well, Excellent. Obviously, now I can tell your lack of Simpsons knowledge, because something horrible happened when Homer did that.
He used a water duck to automate his workflows?
Yeah, well, I think it was just a water bird. It wasn't specifically a duck, but it hit the button on the keyboard.
Are you saying there's other animals/birds that wear hats and dip their beaks in water?
I believe there are flocks of them, Dan. A whole flocking bunch. But
hats and beak dipping? I find that hard to believe.
Okay, I don't know what to tell you. It was on The Simpsons. So
I have to say that I'm getting an extra kick out of this only because I'm envisioning, like, we are at a conference center, and it's this, you know, this event, and Joe is up on stage, and they've just put the microphones in the audience, and it's just Dan and I standing at each microphone with a line of people behind us, just pestering Joe with questions.
Sir, if I may, have you ever considered a water duck?
Yeah, big fan of your work, but in episode 92, you guys talked about the temperature, but one good thing, though, is that the ThermPro lets me know what the high and the low was, so I don't have to necessarily be here for every second watching that tick by and being like, oh no, I missed the highest point it was today, because apparently that was 94.8.
See, but there is sort of a sick joy in celebrating your misery of like, oh god, it's so hot in here. It's basically my entire existence. But you could do that too now because you have a ThermPro.
Yeah, I mean, you basically just like flog yourself in your office all day, because you have, it's regularly like what, 82, 84 degrees in there?
It is regularly 3 to 4 degrees hotter than the rest of the house. So it is currently 80.2 and 44% humidity. It's been a very humid week. It's normally 29% humidity in here, but it's been very overcast and rainy, and unfortunately the mosquitoes have finally returned for the year, which is making me very angry.
Ugh.
The rest of the house is pleasant, though. It's nice, like 76 77.
That's good. For some reason though, my peak humidity was 62% and the lowest was 36, and right now it's 37, so I think I might have put a hand over a sensor or something, because I don't know how it got up to 62.
You got to be very careful where you place it. You don't want to put it next to something that gets too warm or too hot. Like, you know, you don't want to put it right next to your hard drives or your laptop or your, I don't know, swamp cooler or whatever kicks out a bunch of humidity.
Yeah, no, nothing in here. It was on a glass table.
Don't put it next to your dry ice buckets that you use for your Halloween preparation.
Well, now I'm going to have to rethink where I put those, because I generally store them on the dining room table. But but anyway, Micah.
Yeah.
What's your temp sitch? What's your temp sitch?
Oh, right now we are sitting at, can't find it. There we go. 72 degrees now. What? It went down a degree.
Oh, and that sounds so pleasant.
51% humidity, though I'm sure that humidity is going to drop overnight. And so I will have to balance that out with the humidifier that I have here.
What are the outdoor temperatures where you live?
It is currently... I'm checking my carrot. Oh, my. It's only 73 degrees outside.
That's a good thing. This is an audio podcast. So nobody can see you check your carrot.
But,
no, that's fine. We were having a little bit of a heat wave here. And then Dan just lives in Phoenix, so...
Well, it's very overcast here today. I think the high was only like 93 or something. It was surprising.
Yeah, well...
You sound like a meteorologist.
I have to be. I have three different weather widgets in my little doodad on my phone. That makes me a...
Weather widgets.
It makes me a de facto
doodad.
Meteorologist.
Well, you should get one of those electronic weather stations that can pipe the stuff to Weather Underground, and then you can actually check it on your phone.
Well, somebody in my neighborhood already has one, so I don't have to do that.
So then why do you need the other two?
Ooh. Because it's fun, that's why.
You know, I am dubious about the maintenance to the Weather Underground weather stations in somebody's backyard, so I just want to make sure that they like didn't freeze up for a day or two and have false information.
I love that you I mean, it's all are you growing like a plant that you're not supposed to grow? Are you worried about your baby chickens not hatching?
Nothing grows
it's like
here.
You have to have very
nothing
specific
grows here, nothing lives here. I'm just very curious about what I can get away with in terms of clothing or how long I can be outside before I'm going to break into a sweat. And I need to plan my day accordingly.
Yeah, well, that's not entirely true because you can grow succulents there. That's how you get Dan's succulents. The infamous Instagram account.
Yeah, you can grow your succulents in the Safeway.
Yeah. So, anyway...
Thank you for that.
We covered weather like Micah wanted, and now we can cover food like Micah wants, right?
Well, he's doing some chicken in the oven.
Yeah,
what kind of chicken?
It's just a plain old chicken breast. I am doing a thing where I'm staying away from high carb and high glycemic index foods. It's a bit of an experiment to make sure that there's not something very, very wrong with my body. so that's fun. So that means kind of a lot of bland foods, which, you know, I have always been, and like this is the thing that gets me in trouble on the internet. Food doesn't really matter all that much to me. a bottle of Soylent brings me just as much lack of joy as like a plate of spaghetti from a fancy restaurant or something. It's very
does
few
that
food.
Include shower spaghetti.
See, that is why I eat food in the shower, because I get like an extra jolt of pleasure from it. Look, okay,
TMI.
Food is
so pleasureless that you have to do other things at the same time to supplement your pleasure.
Yeah, other things.
Supplement your pleasure. Food is almost always just a means to an end for me. Like, it is, I am Andy, what's his face, from Parks and Rec. Like, I understand that food equals energy, and I require it to keep moving. And so during the day, I will have... you know, a couple bites of food as needed to make sure that I keep moving along. That sounds like I don't hardly eat. I do eat, but it's just like, I don't know. A lot of people, they really enjoy food, and I'm glad that they do. And they get so much pleasure out of like going to a fancy restaurant and eating weird brown $1,000 mushroom things that grow in the ground. And I don't like that. It doesn't matter to me. That's like a bottle of emulsified Cheerios, which is sort of what Soylent tastes like. In my brain, it clicks the same things that, you know, truffle oil does, because all it is, well, and frankly, Soylent would do better for me than truffle oil. It's energy that my body needs to keep moving along. And that's why, despite actually enjoying fancy coffee, I can also just drink normal coffee, because to me it is a means to have caffeine added to my bloodstream so that I am more alert for longer periods of time. Most of the stuff that goes into my mouth is just means to an end in my brain.
Title.
Okay, I have follow-up questions. Would you like to go first, Joe?
Oh, I just wanted to say, Micah, can you please tell Dan and the audience, who might not be aware from our other show, what your feelings on steak are.
Steak is the worst. It is the worst. I don't get steak, people. Steak is a giant puck of cow protein that it is a singular object of just like it's just this puck of substance, and you can put butter on it, you can put a little bit of salt on it, but people actually enjoy that, and I don't understand, like, if I'm going, like I said, there are a few foods out there that do, you know, cause like a slight smile that make my Grinch heart grow three sizes, and that's because it's like complex flavors all added together. This is walking up to a cow, cutting a piece out of it, and putting it on a grill or in the oven or in your sous vide machine, and then eating it. There's like, it's so non-creative and so boring, and it's so very basic. And it's like cavemen ate steak, we eat steak, when there's so many other things that you can have out there. That's how I feel about steak.
Attack Dan.
I don't want this show to be 3 hours long, because it would just be a 3-hour report about steak. Okay, so first question is kind of a real question. Are you actually a robot instead of a human being? And you have to tell me. It's like being a cop. You have to actually tell me if I ask.
First of all, that is a lie. Cops don't. That's like that's a thing that people say when they don't know how laws work.
You're dodging the question, sir. Are you in fact a robot or not?
That is part of my programming to dodge that question. No, I'm not a robot. I just. You don't care about food.
Okay. Secondly, is a statement. Food is not a means to an end. Food is the end, in my opinion. So that's there. Do you now or have you ever enjoyed incredibly spicy food?
As a youngster, I didn't really like spicy food growing up, but now it does. Yeah, it brings me a little bit of joy. If I'm going to have something, I would rather drown it in like pepper and other delicious spices just have it by itself.
Pepper, as in black pepper?
Yeah.
Drown it in black pepper.
There's no spicy.
There's not a... Wait, okay, okay.
What do you think spicy is?
Separate things. Uh-huh. Really quickly, pepper. Uh-huh. Like, there's not enough pepper in the world to satisfy me. I would just eat pepper kernels all day if it would, you know, provide the sustenance that I need, because it's just enough excitement, and it, like I said, if it was like sustenance as well. So pepper over there. Okay, spicy. I think spicy has two different definitions based on where you're from. If you typically enjoy a lot of Indian-based foods or Indian-themed foods, then spicy means having a lot of different spices in it and adding flavor. But if you enjoy a lot of foods that have like capsaicin and things that burn your tongue in your mouth and cause indigestion, then spicy food is like hot sauce and, jalapenos and other things that make it burn your mouth and cause indigestion. I am a fan of the latter more than the former. Foods that have a bunch of different spices and cardamom and sweet this and all of that stuff, it's a little bit too much, and it just ends up being like this. I don't like it. I think that the flavors kind of get drowned out. But I do like the experience of having my like sinuses flare a little bit and my mouth kind of rustle against the flavor of capsaicin hitting my tongue. So I guess now I have to follow up to ask you both what your definition of spicy is.
Well, I will go first because mine is the meekest. I like you, was not raised liking spicy foods and not having an appreciation for it. I would say that I'm a very medium spicy kind of person. If there is a medium spicy option, I will go for that. I am not a high spicy, eyes watering, I'm going to die, oh God, please kill me kind of a person. And I'm not somebody who likes things that don't have spice in them. I would say that, if you're ordering like certain Thai dishes and they are completely bland without any oomph, or et cetera. So medium spicy would best describe me. And so now Dan, to round out our Goldilocks trio here, Papa Bear, what do you got to say?
Oh God, Daddy
First
Bear.
Of all, don't ever call me Papa Bear. I swear to God.
Daddy Bear.
Oh no.
no one's father, papa, or daddy. I just want to get that straightforward here. Oh, God.
This is my favorite show right now.
I don't know why I tolerate this.
So anyway, bring the spice, Dad.
I grew up being a medium spice person, and now there is not enough spice, unless it's those like chemically concentrated capsaicin things that are trying to kill you. I love to run right up to the limit of, like, I feel like I'm about to pass out from heat, and my face is sweating, and my ears are sweating, and my knees are sweating kind of heat, because I find it enjoyable. But that's just because I'm an insane person. I don't do it all the time because, yes, I would have no lining to my stomach, but I do enjoy the very spicy food. And yeah, when we say spicy, we mean the heat and pain spicy, not just like spices are added, but that, you know, spices being added to things and adding flavor and stuff. That just comes with the territory because, you know, we enjoy eating food.
Yeah.
I very much enjoy eating food, all the food,
yeah,
except Indian food. I don't like Indian food.
Oh, that's wrong.
No, I'm with you. I don't like it either. I think that they're just assaulting me with flavor, and it gets to a point where I feel attacked eating Indian food. It's like, oh my gosh, where did that come from? Oh, now there's cinnamon in my mouth. Oh my gosh, pumpkin, what's going on? So it makes me feel confused and scared. Like this podcast.
Come on.
I would just like to say, you see what you guys have done? I don't know if you're looking at the chat room, but somebody named Daddy Bear has just joined our chat room.
Oh, dear.
I blame both of you for this.
This is not my fault.
Well, you're talking about spice, and, you know, every boy and every girl, you know, spice up your life.
Wait, so steak, though.
Yeah.
Because I do want to hear, Joe, I've suffered your opinions on steak, but you can share them again. But I really want to know what Dan thinks about steak, because the interesting thing is, when I listen to the show and you two talk about food, 9 times out of 10, I agree with the things that Dan is saying. Whereas most of the time I disagree with the things that you are saying, including the fact that ranch dressing is the best thing. So again, there's a thing in life that is a food that is not just means to an end for me. It actually is like, oh yes, I will have ranch on that. That will make it taste good and will make my heart grow 2 sizes. But anyway, steak, Dan, what's up?
I meant to send this to you the other day, but I don't know if you saw it going around the internet because I didn't send it to you. Somebody got a tattoo of a bottle of ranch sauce on their shoulder. It was a very nice looking thing. I approved.
Hidden Valley or Kraft?
I'm pretty sure it was Hidden Valley. I can't remember. But this is going to be apparently the end of our food bonding, Micah, because I enjoy a steak. It is a simple meal. It is, yes, as you say, it's what I was trying to get to earlier with the discussion of the spiciness and the preferences you have is whether or not it's just a matter of very sort of simple, kind of not outlandish flavors that don't really move you. And you got to really go to the broad end of the spectrum before you actually start to feel something about the food. But for steak is, as you mentioned, it is a simple protein conveyance for butter and a couple other spices, maybe some peppercorns here and there if you're into that kind of thing. But it's just some soft, chewy, buttery protein, and it's good. It can be good. It's not going to wow you in most instances. It's one of those things where if you do it perfectly and if you do it right, it just has some nice meaty flavor and buttery, but it's not like, it's not going to blow your mind or anything. It's just good. It's like a Mondrian. It's simple, but it's nice.
Okay, but so many people will say, you ask them what's their favorite food, and they say steak. And people are like, if there's one thing I can't go without, it's steak. Don't take away my steak. Like, there are people who will die. That's their hill to die on. It's a hill made of steak. And So Dan, what's your favorite food? And Joe, what's your favorite food? And if you say steak, I'm hanging up this call. No, I'm just kidding.
I would not say my favorite food is steak. And for the people who do say their favorite food is steak, I think a lot of that comes from the steakhouse dining experience, which is generally reserved for special occasions and sort of like, let's get dressed up and go to an expensive restaurant and eat a steak and some really buttery wine sauced mushrooms and some sort of like fried potato thing with jalapenos in it or whatever. So I think the steak is an experience. Going out for a steak is a thing, not necessarily that the steak itself is the quintessential meal, because don't know. I would cop out if I had to decide right now my favorite meal and say something like pizza, because it's very versatile and you can put things on top of it. Don't you dare address the fact that I just said versatile. Either of you.
That's all I could think about. He lost me at versatile.
Go ahead, Joe. What is your favorite food and what do you think of steak?
Okay, so it's very difficult to pick a favorite food because I like so many different things, unlike Micah. If I had to like pick something right now off the top of my head, it'd probably be pasta because it's so versatile. But I'm down for some versatile pizza as well. But pasta you can do anything with. And like you're saying, with your love of peppercorns, you could have your cacio e pepe, you could have your lasagna, you could do manicotti, you could do whatever you feel like. Pasta it has to be. Now in regards to my steak feelings, a brief summation of steak feelings that I've expressed to Micah in the past. I like a steak that's worth having, like it's good. I do not like a steak that is not worth having, that you are having because you feel like you need to have steak, that you are at an Outback Steakhouse and you are at Longhorn, you're at whatever, and you're just having some factory farm lump that it needs to be a certain ounce size so that you can go, oh yeah, I had the 10 ounce. And it's just like, no one cares, bro. There's a whole cultural of toxic masculinity around about steak consumption that I could do without. And in regards to people who associate with fancy things, I would agree with that. I would agree, and I would say, you know, look at our president Donald Trump, who has a ill prepared steak every day because he thinks that's what good things are. But even though he's not eating a good steak, but that's the world we live in. So we've discussed all of our foods then.
Yes, I do think we should talk about this movie, even though Dan is accusing me of under the guise of talking about movies, coming on this show to talk to you two about food and
humidity. We can do this as a two-part episode. We can just go food for the next hour and then come back and do Kingsman some other day.
Yeah. We're going to talk about pie and food, and which I consider separate entities, of course, for hours.
Wait, pie is not food?
Well, okay, it is food, but
I need you to walk that back and clarify.
Okay, walking it back. Beep, beep, beep. It is one of the, like, again, in my mind, it's not even a Venn diagram because there's no crossover. So what do we have? A split chart. There's a pie chart. And on that pie chart, we've got food. And food, again, is like energy for the body, means to an end. And then there is like a small little area that's, it's food, yes, it's food, but it's things that I actually do, you know, seek out as a form of enjoyment. And pie,
yeah, I was gonna ask,
do you
have cravings at any point in your day? Do you go like, God, I would just really like some macaroni and cheese right now, or whatever it may be?
See, that's why I'm weird, and maybe I am a robot, because I genuinely, like, God's honest truth, I do not have cravings in that way. I will realize, because, you know, the feeling of being hungry, that I'm hungry, and I will go and just grab something that I like. Usually I'm looking for things that I make sure, like, we're stocked with things that have like a balanced amount of protein and carbs and stuff like that, so that it is both filling and keeps me, like,
you're so well adjusted. This is making me angry. What is the matter?
I could go like 5 weeks just eating peanut butter on bread and making sure that I like take my vitamin C in the morning or something.
Chunky or smooth?
Oh, chunky, of course. See, there's the experience again. That's what I have to add. It is chunky peanut butter is the shower dining of peanut butter, in the sense that you're adding that extra little bit to get some pleasure out of it.
How is that even an analogy?
It's not. It's a phonology.
If I didn't know you personally, and then I just had this discussion with you at a bar or something, I would think you had landed on the planet Earth about 4 months ago, and you're like, look at this food, how fascinating. This one is creamy, and this one has crunchy things in it, and how amusing is this? It's like, oh, the red light has turned on my shoulder, which means it is time to consume more fuel. Nom, nom,
that's
like,
how I don't feel, Dan.
I don't understand it. I don't feel that way at all. I would eat pasta and pizza and steak 24 hours a day if it wouldn't make me vomit all over myself and just pass out and die. Like, the act of consuming delicious food is so much fun. I just want to ruin my life with it.
So that's where I think we're different. Like, it used to actually be growing up, the act of consuming food bothered me on a fundamental level where I was like, man, this is stupid. I hate that I have to eat these things in order to keep living, which I don't feel like, that was just me being an idiot, basically. Like, now.
I agree with that sentiment. I hate the fact that I have to eat three times a day or whatever I'm supposed to eat, but then they'll be like, in the middle of the night, I'll be like, you know what? I really want like a burrito right now because that sounds super delicious and satisfying.
Yeah. I guess if I woke up in the middle of the night and was like, oh man, I'm really hungry, then again, I would just like go make a rice cake with some peanut butter on it. There's something about peanut butter, apparently. It's just because, again, it's kind of like going down the scale of, okay, I know that if I eat this, I'm not going to be hungry again in 3 hours and have to eat another one. So I will have the peanut butter with, you know, blah, blah, blah. But again, it's kind of like whatever happens to be in the cabinet at the time. And I think that's why if someone asks me what my favorite food is, I'll tell them salad, because it genuinely is. I love salad. I like that it's kind of like a fresh light thing, and again that you can add multiple things. It's like the opposite of steak, which I think maybe is why they serve it with steak so much. Light, fresh, crisp, varied. And
what kind of salad is your favorite salad?
Caesar salad, hands down. A Caesar salad, which to me would be you know, it has to have the Caesar dressing, it has to have Parmesan, and that's pretty much like the only, other than like, you know, you get your romaine lettuce and all that jazz. But the main things to make it a Caesar salad, of course, is a Caesar dressing and a sprinkle of Parmesan.
And croutons?
Oh, yeah, croutons. Thank you. Yes.
I mean, that's like the part you pick out and eat when you're a kid because the rest of it is so uninteresting to you.
See, now, Caesar salad is something I would put in the same category as steak as being a simple, perfected type of food. But as you said earlier, it is kind of the anti-steak. But it still sort of fits that same mold of very simple and when well done is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, you can walk in anywhere and get a Caesar salad. And sometimes what you're going to get is going to be just disappointment. Some other places will have a well-executed Caesar salad, you know, where they actually take the anchovies and they do the mustard powder and the whole nine yards and they make the actual dressing rather than just like some store-bought like vat of stuff. And that, you know, really adds to the experience because the whole reason why Caesar salad exists is because it was a tableside dining experience. It's supposed to be theatrical, the assembly of the salad. It was supposed to be a big deal.
Like, that's how they make like avocado. What is it? Avocado dip. What's that called? Guacamole. avocado dip.
Oh my god.
You know, put guacamole on your toast. oh my god. I don't know food. I am a robot.
I might actually need a minute here. I'm crying.
So salad, Caesar salad. Yeah. So Joe's over there going like, you can go into a grocery store and buy the Caesar salad where the lettuce leaves are brown at the bottom, but the rest of it's okay, and everything's dry and gross, and I would not eat that. For me, a Caesar salad is a Caesar salad, and so, you know, the little bit of the little blip on my heart radar will light up as much with a grocery store Caesar salad as it will with one that you know, is made tableside like avocado dip.
but they recognize both the difference between the fresh one and the bagged one at the grocery store.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They taste different to me, and like I get why the one that you get at the restaurant costs more money. But in terms of, you know, what it does for me, they both do the same thing for me. And
so the grocery store one, when you consume it, reads out more like a 10011, and the fresh one is more like a 10010.
I need to consult my logs. It takes a while to print them out.
Oh my god, this has been. I was going to say enlightening, but no, it hasn't been. This has just been thoroughly confusing.
Yeah.
How has it been 45 minutes and I feel so lost?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you said you wanted the defocused experience, so.
This is true. I mean, yeah. I'm living for this.
It's right there in the name, Micah. Yeah. It's right there in the name.
But everything's a little blurry right now.
We probably should switch to discussing Micah's favorite movie that he picked. Oh. Well, this is also an interesting topic then.
The Social Network is my favorite movie.
Ah, well, Booyah! We already did that one.
That's another thing we can agree on.
It's a great movie.
It's fine. Yeah. I will alleviate any concerns immediately right off the bat and say that I liked Kingsman quite a bit. And I enjoy it, and thank you for picking it, because I'd been meaning to watch it, but it's never, like, been free to stream anywhere, and I was just too lazy to spend the $3 to rent it, but I did, because I care so much about you. And I know that Dan had worked on it.
Thank you for the residuals that I'm not going
to
get.
And I hadn't bothered to watch it, even though he had worked on it up until this point. So I guess that lets you know how much more I like you than Dan. But
it's all right. I've never seen the Smurfs, whichever one that you worked on.
Dan, I worked on two of them. Let's never talk about bad things. Let's only talk about the good things.
So what did you like about Kingsman?
Can I just say really quickly? So watching it back again this time, I was, you know, putting myself in the mind of Dan and Joe. And for me, that meant like being super critical of the film. And I started to get a little nervous, like, oh my God, what if they're not going to like this at all? And I'm really surprised, especially for Joe, that you, I guess we haven't necessarily heard Dan's opinions, but I'm surprised, Joe, that you liked it. Cause, and, you know, explain, of course, I just, there's some very like, silly stuff about it that to me doesn't line up with who I know you to be. So why did you like this film? I'm surprised.
I like silly stuff when it works in the context of the film that it's inside of. And I feel like it works in the context of this film. There are a couple of exceptions to that, I would say. But overall, I quite enjoyed it. Even the meta commentary on the genre that it occupies. I've never read the graphic novel, although perhaps I will go do that. I don't like things that are sad or down or grumpy. Then there's fun to be had here. And Colin Firth, who could dislike Colin Firth? But Dan, do you want to talk about your feelings on this? Because sometimes I know that in the past when I have worked on something and then I have to see it, I'm either like, oh wow, that's great, I'm glad I worked on that, or I'm like, in spite of how amazing this was, I really hate sitting through it because I know all the pain that it caused me. And then sometimes you get the whole like, oh, this was fun to work on, oh man, that was crap. Which one of those three would you categorize as being your viewing experience when you first witnessed Kingsman?
First of all, I want to say, as a reaction to your opinion on the movie, not to attempt to pitch any sort of strange theory or anything, but I do want to say this does fit the mold for including space, albeit briefly, in the movie. So that is one reason it should get a pass from you, because there's a little bit of space in it. But in terms of my own opinion, I do enjoy this movie. When I had begun working on it, I had no idea what it was. It was under some goofy code name or something. I couldn't tell you what it was now, but I think we were halfway through working on it when the trailer came out, and I was like, okay, I think this is related to that thing. And I watched it and I was like, well, that's very strange looking and odd, but that seems cool. And that kind of explains why this woman running around has knee-high socks with a bunch of stickers all over them. But I thought it was a really fun movie. I mean, it's got a lot of great references to the old Bond stuff that you like. It's got some fun modern twists on it. It's got some really, like, just weird and odd, like, fun directing choices and camera choices. Like, you can tell the people making this were just kind of like, you know what, let's try some weird stuff and see how it goes. And some of it is just weird and some of it is super fun. And at the end of the day, the movie doesn't take itself too seriously, which is kind of weird because, like, the plot is the destruction of the human race. But it does the things that it's making fun of, and I think it does it really well in terms of, like, you know, the ridiculous megalomaniac with his plot to destroy the world and take over, and the, you know, he's the crazy weird rich guy who has some strange affectation, and then there's like a plot to save the world and fights and stuff, and I think it's cool. And it's not exactly like a heady movie or anything, but it's fun to watch, and I've probably seen it, I don't know, 20 times on HBO or whenever it was out.
You've seen it multiple times?
Many times, yes.
Oh, other than, like, whenever you were editing it, of course.
Yeah. Well, I bought it, watched it a few times on iTunes, but then whenever it made the rounds on whatever premium movie channels that I subscribed to, I watched it whenever it was on, because there's always a fun bit to enjoy in this.
Yeah, so I obviously, like, I don't condone violence in real life, but I really love the choreographed and, like, well-shot fight scenes in all of this. It's so incredibly violent and terrible, but they take it to the extreme and they don't, like, you know, give up on it at all. And it always ends with some sort of ridiculously dorky kind of, and now I've finished and I can very slowly bring this glass of bourbon across the room and sip it or finish my beer or something like that. And it's, I find those little moments delightful where we just kicked a bunch of tuchus and now we are, you know, finishing up and being proud of the fact that we've done so. So super intense at times, but in a way that I quite enjoyed. And, I think that they're all very well shot and put together. But I don't know. What did you feel about the fight scenes? Other than the fact that, like I said, they're super, super violent.
Well, I like them. And they are super violent. He has a very interesting directing style for how he chooses to stage these and select, you know, which shots are going to go on for a very long time and which shots are going to be, a little bit of a quicker cut, shall we say. But I generally enjoyed it. There are some of the action scenes, though, where in an effort to get the digitally perfect stylized pose that he would like to get, it kind of gets a little video gamey / torque. it just like for a couple of things. But generally, I enjoyed it. Even the super horribly violent church scene.
Oh, boy.
Did the seams bother you in that one? Because as a visual effects artist, I know you can see all of the seams where it's shot like it's supposed to be a big long one take, but it's not, and you can see where it's not.
Yeah, no, it didn't bother me. And I got certainly that they could not do that. It's as one long take, but it worked. It was just like, wow, just it's a knife in someone's head. There's another knife in someone's head, and oh, that knife is now back in that other person's head. Wow, that's just like you were just keeping track of where the props were going through and into people. There was like one unfortunate one. I think when he stabs the guy at the end with the pole or whatever, like the spear pole, flag pole thing, right through the torso. That cut does not seem natural from the pose that they were in prior to that. But whatever, it's fine. And as for the one of my favorite scenes, the introductory scene where we see Colin Firth and Eggsy at the pub, and the jerks show up, that scene works really well because they tied it into the little speech and performance before and after. So it feels like a... you can see it coming that he's going to kick all of their butts, and it starts to go off pretty slowly. Like, I'm just going to slowly walk over here and I'm going to lock these doors, you're just going to watch those shots, and then my beer that I had put down here, I'm going to grab with the cane and then rake it across, and it's going to fly across the room and hit somebody's head, and we're going to track with the beer as it flies through the air. Would you say that
they were locked in there with him, Joe?
I would say they were locked in there with him. And it really had an interesting feel to it, because I generally don't like speed ramps. I don't know if your Watchmen reference was specifically to Zack Snyder's love of speed ramps, his speed ramp philia. But the Matthew Vaughn didn't use it in a way that sickened me or made me tired of it. So that's fine. Like tracking that... you know, beer glass while it hits that person, and then we're out and we're back doing normal stuff for the most part.
Right after that is one of my favorite speed ramps, is where he uses his umbrella to deflect the first punch that goes into the other guy, and his tooth comes flying out with a wad of spit, and it slows down right as the other guy has this horrified look on his face like, ew, gross, a tooth.
Yeah, no, it works really well. But I know that, Micah, you were saying that you liked all of these, but do you generally like fight movies, or is this just an exception to that?
That's a good question. So I am a sucker for these. Like, I haven't seen Atomic Blonde yet, but I know that I'm going to like the parts where they're fighting and like things kind of, I guess I'm a sucker for speed ramps. Now that I know what they are in the context of movie shooting. I think that there's something whether it's, you know, the actual actor or an extra or what have you, I appreciate the kind of time and the planning and stuff that goes into that. And just knowing like how long that would take to make sure that they got all that right, and whatever planning had to happen beforehand to do the scenes where you are watching, you know, them grab a hand and then do this and do that, whether it happens at separate times or all together and what is and what isn't, all that's really super exciting and fascinating to me. And so, yeah, I guess I am. I'm not. Like, I can always tell when something's really poorly choreographed. Like, I immediately hated Iron Fist because every single thing in there was just so poorly done whenever it came to whatever his name is, fighting people. But in movies where there tend to be action like that, and we have these scenes where somebody's going through and just kicking a bunch of butt, I do enjoy that. I think it's a lot of fun. So I don't necessarily seek out fighting movies, but anytime that comes up, I'm like, yeah, this is great. And like the reason that this seemed interesting to me was because of the trailer, I'm pretty sure shows at least, you know, a little bit of fighting and like slow motion stuff, but also that I could tell that it was a very strange kind of flick. So those things kind of came together to make me want to watch it in the first place. But I'm always gonna like cheer that on anytime I get to see people just run through a crowd of people and destroy them. Hopefully not kill them like they had to do in this film quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, at least they were bad people, I guess you could say, but he probably shouldn't have murdered all of them. My favorite excuse is when he's trying to leave and the lady's like, where do you think you're going? And then, I forget the exact quote, but he rattles off a list of things that she would find objectionable. And it is absolutely beautiful because then he punctuates it with a Hail Satan and then, walks out. And then the sound is triggered. Yeah.
I'm a Catholic whore currently enjoying Congress out of wedlock with my black Jewish boyfriend who works at a military abortion clinic. So hail Satan and have a lovely afternoon, madam.
I hope you wrote that down, or did you actually memorize that?
No, I was looking at quotes earlier today.
Okay, good, because I was about to try and find it too. That's such a good quote.
It's wonderful. And Colin Firth delivers it beautifully. We should probably talk about the characters in this. Eggsy is the person that we start with. Sorry, that's incorrect. First, we have that weird flashback with the video game one shot where they're like, hey, look, it's a helicopter and stuff.
What did you think about the opening title sequence? Because that was actually a question I was going to ask you. I remember when I first saw it, I liked it. But then, like I said, I went back with the skeptic Joe one eye, Dan the other eye. And I noticed that it was not necessarily the most brilliantly done thing in terms of like whenever the rubble turns into the letters that bounce up. But I did like the sort of zoom in and, you know, like we're hearing the action from far away. But I'm curious, as the knowledgeable individuals in the room, did you like that? Or did you wish that Netflix had put a skip intro button down at the bottom?
No, well, I wouldn't have wanted to skip the intro, but I would have wanted something better. I feel like the quality of what we saw for that opening was not good. And so it looks really cheesy. Like it would have been just better if it had just been text on the screen rather than the too sharp, not really correctly motion blurred stuff. Like it just feels very video gamey. Like I was saying earlier, and it left a bad taste in my mouth for a couple minutes until I realized that the movie was much better than that, and that it would not be representative of the rest that we would see going forward.
That is literally my exact thought when I saw this in the theater. I was like, please don't suck movie. Please don't suck movie. And then it opens up and I'm like, wait, what is this weird rubble flying out? Oh, it's the credits. Oh, thank God. Like, it's not going to be that bad the whole way through. And then they actually pushed through the window and it's like, I've actually almost literally done that same shot. It was supposed to be a miniature where you like push in through a building and you try to like recreate the room in another set, like blend the two. And it totally never, ever, ever works or looks right because the lighting is changing in the room to accommodate the camera, but the lighting doesn't change on the outside of the building. And it's like, that's not even close to real. So let's just cross our fingers that the rest of this is better. And it totally is.
Yeah. And with those kinds of shots, you also have to deal with the lenses being different. So when people are like, pushing in on set, and then that's supposed to like match up with the CG camera. It usually does not.
Yeah, it usually doesn't work. No, unless you have a lot of digital reconstruction of the room, because you're just like, oh, we got plenty of space. And it's like, no, the camera is suddenly in the room, and then it's not like at the window in the room because there is no window in the room. And then it's just kind of like, well, does this geometry, does the floor kind of line up? Sort of, kind of. It's close enough.
I thought this was shot entirely on film and photochemically created afterwards.
Micah, no.
This one?
No, not this one. It was a different one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This has so many different camera formats, too. I think most of the other cameras, I think there's even like DSLRs listed in here. Canon 5Ds. Most of the weird ones are probably for attaching cameras to the ends of the guns, looking back at the talent. But most of it was shot on Alexa. Weirdly, though, not all of it was shot anamorphic. Some of it was shot spherical. I don't know if it was a reshoots kind of thing, but I know... from a person that's definitely not me, that some of it was anamorphic and some of it was not.
I was going to ask if you think any of the cameras could be controlled by Apple Watches, or if it was all just
Micah, you can control the Alexa with an iPhone. I don't think they have the ability to use Safari on the watch yet, though.
What you mentioned earlier, and this was kind of before the show, but I think that, as you mentioned, the way that this is shot does play a part in the overall like quirkiness and quality of the film in that way. But you mentioned that the lenses are usually like really old. So that confuses me. Is it that there are only a certain number out there and people rent them, or like, or they're not being made anymore? Or are they like really expensive and so you can't get them? How does that all work? Because like, why would you go get an old one if you could just have a new one?
All of the above.
Yeah, all of the above. Although I was, I was mistaken. Apparently, according to IMDb, they used Hawk anamorphic lenses on this, which are some of the newer ones. They're still not that new, but yeah, they are very. Given that they are squishing the image horizontally 2x, they have to be engineered very precisely, and that is a hard thing to do. It is a hard thing to keep them from moving and shifting and going out of. Balance or whatever, so that they squish the image improperly, because if it doesn't squish it exactly perfectly, when you unsquish it, your focal plane is going, you'll have like half of someone's face in focus, and then like their ear will be in focus, so it'll be a bad time for all, and then there'll be some weird distortion effect. So they are hard to keep looking nice, and on top of that, the older ones have weird glass coatings that people like, because when you shine a light at them, they create cool funky streaky effects that everyone thinks is reminiscent of Blade Runner, so they all want to use the old lenses instead of the new ones, but these ones don't have that.
Also, there were different benefits to using it back in the old days, where you can squeeze more visual information in on the film stock for when you're doing that, and nowadays I don't really think there is that same kind of a benefit that's provided to you. It's going to be more of an aesthetic choice to have the effects of anamorphic in your film. Would you say that's right, Dan, or am I incorrect in that assessment?
Yeah, these days I don't think you get any sort of benefit from shooting anamorphic. If anything, it's a detriment, because you're using a 4x3 frame instead of 16x9, so you'd be taking up more space shooting anamorphic.
Yeah, because then you have to crop the top and the bottom. For those unfamiliar with that part of it, masking. I meant for us to talk about the characters, but we got a little sidetracked.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry.
It was a good conversation. And so after this intro, we are introduced to Colin Firth's character and other agent characters. There is another person who I'll just call second agent because we don't see much of him. it was Lancelot, right?
Yeah, Lancelot.
We also have another guy who jumps on top of the person that they
Lancelot were. Lancelot was the one that jumped. Right?
Lancelot got turned into the sandwich. The one who jumped was Eggsy's dad, who hadn't yet passed his test, so he didn't have a fun code name.
No.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so he died, and then there's the scene with the medal that he's trying to present to Eggsy's mom, who in this first scene was not at the top of her acting game, I'm going to say. At first I thought she was Rose from Doctor Who, but then I was like, no, she's just got her face all scrunched up because she's crying. But they they handed off the little metal thing. She's like, I don't want your metal. And then he hands it to the kid. And so the kid somehow remembers the code phrase for many years. But this is important because we flash forward and things have not gone well for the Eggsy family. And he is now played by Taron Egerton. And Colin Firth is still played by Colin Firth. Go figure. And Lancelot is murdered by Gazelle in the weird little lodge thing where he was being held by kidnappers from, I don't know, Switzerland or something. There's a very Bond-esque kind of like, oh, I, you know, wouldn't want to spill a drop of this whiskey, blah, 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 blah. But he's gone. And the professor is played by Mark Hamill, which was a curious acting choice, casting choice. That establishes all of the major characters because we get Sam Jackson here as well. And in the morning scene for that, we get the other major character, Arthur, who is played by Sir Michael Caine, who is at the head of the table. So we've got Colin Firth, Michael Caine, Sam Jackson, Taron Egerton, what's her name? Actress who played Gazelle.
You're talking about Sophia
yes, Boutella.
Yeah. Boutella.
Boutella. You're probably right. That gets us all the major ones, I would say.
Don't forget Mark Strong playing Mr. Merlin Man.
I don't think he was playing exactly that, but close enough.
He's a productivity
really.
And spy guru.
Yeah. The hipster PDA, but it was more of a clipboard. But they have an interesting way of getting us to all of these characters as quickly as possible and introducing some aspects of them. So we can see that Colin Firth is not exactly a James Bond type. He has the capabilities of that sort of spy, but he has a certain sense of duty and loyalty feels a sense of being indebted in a way, and also a very gentlemanly concern mm-hmm. with things.
His gentlemanly manners are used for things that are more than just sleeping with a bunch of women, unlike James Bond.
Yeah, like this is a very he has very specific ideals that he tries to set and achieve for himself as well as for the people around him, and I think that sets him apart from other spy performances that you see. The Lancelot that gets killed at the start of the film is much more like a James Bond kind of analog than what we see from Colin Firth, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's very well put. I think, you know, James Bond obviously would not care about diversity in the Kingsman program, whereas, you know, he was not, even though he got a talking down from Michael Caine, he was still, or from Arthur rather, Harry was still looking to bring in, you know, some different people to the program because he felt that would make it better. And yeah, I don't really see James Bond being concerned with that kind of thing and, you know, helping rehabilitate individuals, as it were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting streak to have for this person who is by all accounts a remorseless killing machine. But he does have remorse, and he does, feel very strongly about, the debt that he owes, to Eggsy's father and how he wants to take care of Eggsy and make sure that he's living the best life he can live. And he does that in a very manipulative way, but in a good manipulative way, to try and get him to join up and apply to take on the role of Lancelot, to be the next Lancelot, because they're going to fill that position. That gets him involved in a more positive program than what he was experiencing in his life prior to that, where he was the son of a lady who had fallen on hard times and fallen in with a really rough crowd and a two-bit crook, I would say. It's not mm-hmm. exactly clear if he steals anything from anyone or performs any sort of mass illegal activity. It just seems like he's just a thug.
He's supposed to be like feared, and he's, you know, the big guy and has these odd crew members, but I agree, it's like, what do you even do?
There's a line of dialogue that dismisses it when Colin Firth airplays through the jacket into the speaker and says, I have enough information on your organization to take you down or whatever. But that's about it. So he is some sort of organized crime. But yeah, it is very nondescript. And he's just there to be an angry, drunken bad guy who's making out with Eggsy's mom and making him mad.
Yeah.
Ugh. I mean, I think that he does a good job. At least he did for me of making me disgusted. Like, I was very quickly ready to punch him through the screen. So I think that that actor did a fine job. I agree. I think that the gal who plays Iggy's mom did not do such a great job. I think even through most of the like first three quarters of the movie, a lot of times I was like, that's not a choice I would have made there. I don't understand. Are you actually upset or are you acting? So yeah, I agree there. That always took me out a little bit, but I think that many of the other characters play it to a T. I think that Sam Jackson, he does a good job of just being like a quirky, strange person, but I almost felt like instead of actually being good at having a lisp, he was playing a character who pretended to have a lisp to like add a unique quality about themselves. It's like, I'm bored. I have all the money in the world. I want to make something different. So I'm going to add, you know, a change in my speech to just add some character or something. Mm. I guess what I'm saying is there were times whenever you would expect that there would be that, you know, unique quality to the voice in certain words, and it didn't happen. And I'm like, did they just tell you like at some point, oh, by the way, you need to add a lisp to your character's voice. And so he's like, okay, I'm just going to do that now. And
I think
practice.
He probably decided to do that on his own.
Really?
I would imagine.
I don't know. But the sibilant S's definitely came and went. I'm not going to question Sam Jackson's devotion to the role, but he's very similar to other Sam Jackson characters, except that he has this lisp on. And most of the character traits that would make him different are things that are on the written page, the lines that he has to deliver about, you know, especially the part where he abhors violence and bloodshed, and the sight of blood, he'll lose his lunch. Like, these are interesting affectations, but they're definitely not like acting choices that he came up with.
If you permit me to read from the internet for a moment.
Please do.
According to IMDb trivia, which I'm sure is 100% accurate, it says many of the villains in the James Bond franchise have had some sort of physical dysfunction, difference, or abnormality. Samuel Jackson's character of Richmond Valentine was originally intended not to have a lisp. However, Jackson completed the first take with a lisp. Matthew Vaughn yelled cut and talked to Jackson, who revealed to Vaughn that prior to having an acting career, he actually had a lisp, which he eventually overcame. It was also jokingly remarked that this lisp is Valentine's reason for being villainous. So... He's a psychotic Elon Musk who is angry at the world because he had a lisp.
I thought he was
and
more.
Yet he wants to save the world in his own strange way.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Well, I mean, Elon Musk, right? I mean,
true.
Who's to say at one point he's not going to pivot and be like, "Oh yeah, all these autonomous cars are there to run down people because the world is overpopulated."
Well, I thought
that's terrifying and maybe true.
I was gonna say maybe he's a little bit more like, I don't know, Dr. Dre, Sir Richard Branson.
I saw him as a Zuckerberg. Like Zuckerberg snaps, but I don't know. Zuckerberg doesn't have the what is the term? He doesn't
charm?
Have. Yeah, he doesn't have the charm. He doesn't have that quality. He's a robot like I am, and so he doesn't quite have that quality that it takes to be able to. I don't know. I feel like if Zuckerberg was like, oh, by the way, I'm going to destroy the world, people just laugh and be like, okay, Zuck, that's, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Like, have you seen all of his...
He's met so many wonderful truck drivers at gas stops in the country that he would
really
never do that.
I really love Kansas. I had the best steak the other day. I was like, all right, I'm not voting for Zuckerberg.
It was a chicken fried steak, by the way. in my headcanon, when Mr. Valentine needs a new satellite and he calls E-Man on his V-Glass, I always think that he's calling Elon Musk for a help out on that one. So I think Elon Musk is... equally villainized in this movie.
Yeah, I'm sure, why not? He's basically a Bond villain. He's digging tunnels and things.
And a bad Barack Obama, by the way.
Yeah.
He sounded nothing like... There's so many people... I can impersonate, like, I can do a better impression of Barack Obama than that person in the film did. They just, like, chose a man who had a deep voice. And I was like, okay, you're Barack Obama, go. I was a little disappointed by that because, again, you could, like, type into YouTube Barack Obama impersonation and hire one of those people to send in voice, and it would have been better.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice too because he was at the time the sitting president, but he's not really addressed by name, but he's very obviously supposed to be that sitting president, and with the things that happen at the end of the film, I had a question of what happened to the president in the film.
Oh my goodness, you're right.
Yeah, but
he blew up.
Yeah.
What was the question?
Yeah, well, it was an interesting choice on everyone's part making this. But we have these interesting characters, and like we had discussed the qualities that Colin Firth has of duty and service and performing up to one's best and also striving to do other things in the world that are good. We've got Eggsy, who is out for himself and very self-destructive. At the start of this, he doesn't really care about... He doesn't care that something will get him in trouble. He will go ahead and do it because he gives zero craps about, like, life or anything because it's so bad for him right now.
Can I say, I think maybe it's inaccurate to say, unless you mean like he's got it out for himself, in which case I agree. I don't know that he's necessarily like on the face of it. I don't see him as selfish. I see him as being so, because like he saved his friends in that situation by running the car into the thing. They were able to get away. He protects his friends there. He's obviously protective of his mother. He's protective of his little sibling. I can't remember if it's baby sister. Protective of his sibling. He's protective of everybody else. And it's like his destructive he doesn't care about himself is how I see it and kind of what happens to him, which in the end is a bit selfish because, you know, if you're gone, then you can't protect your mother, your baby sister, and your friends. Mm-hmm. But he is willing to kind of do the wrong thing to protect other people. So he certainly doesn't come across as a selfish character, again, on the face of it.
Yeah, sorry, I said self-destructive. I would agree that he doesn't really seem like he's not greedy or anything, not like that other worthless guy who shows up at the end who was kicked out of the program. But... Ugh. Yeah, just the worst. New Harvard, Oxford. Cambridge. So the part of this movie is, of course, the learning to work as a team, even though you will never work with these people ever again, and to be part of the Kingsmen in service. And so there is a more diverse cast of candidates that are presented to be a part of this that Eggsy is drawn into. Reluctantly at first, but out of interest in what he could theoretically achieve. And there's even that like Hemingway quote, you're trying to be better than everybody else. You're trying to be better than who you used to be or whatever. I'm paraphrasing.
There is nothing noble in being superior to your fellow man. True nobility is being superior to your former self.
Yes. Thank you, Hemingway. But the
who was British?
Yeah, they had this that sort of thing where he's starting to come around to this idea, and they go through the program, and people start peeling off out of this one after the other, and he's learning some valuable lessons along the way about the value of life and the value of working with others, etc., that he wouldn't necessarily have had prior to this, where he was very much on the lookout for, he would have, I would say, be more on the lookout for himself in these mm-hmm. scenarios. Like the first time where there's supposed to be drowning and poor Amelia didn't make it. And then we find out much later that that was all staged. They don't actually want to kill anybody in the training program. But that's a good joke.
Good joke, bruh.
I was very curious why they didn't just like run over and try to resuscitate her. They're like, nope, definitely dead. she's gone. But they have the the program also to set up his friendship with Roxy, who is not really a love interest. She is much more of a peer to him. And she winds up getting the Lancelot position that he wasn't going to get.
What did it take?
They had to shoot a dog. The dog that they had, that had been with them in the training program since it was a tiny little puppy for, I forget how long it was supposed to be, like 6 months, 8 months, almost a year or something. Because we saw it go from tiny, tiny little thing that was like bopping up and down inside of his vest to something that could like walk and have some...
And love and care and be adorable. And they almost lost me. When I first saw this, I was like, okay, I hate this movie now. For a not insignificant portion of time, I was just grumping, and slumped down grumping about the fact that they, quote, shot, unquote, the dogs.
No, it was, I had a very strong inclination that it was Blanks in that particular scene. Because his study is so nice, he wouldn't want to make a mess.
There was plastic on the
floor,
though.
Yeah, there was. It's all set up.
Yeah, I guess.
That's telltale. You're about to get whacked.
Yeah, so anyway, the dog is fine. He's reprimanded by Michael Caine in this scene and told to leave. And then he steals the taxi that belongs to Michael Caine and drives it back to London and threatens the jerky boyfriend of the mother, but then the cab drives him over to Harry's place, and we get some more character reveals here, and so we find out Amelia didn't die, and this is his dog, Mr. Pickles, and it reminds him every day of his life of the choice he had to make, and he's like, oh no, you shot and stuffed your dog. He said, no, he says, yes, I did shoot and stuff my dog, but he didn't die from being shot, because he died from pancreatitis, like, years later, he says it's Blanks, and it's all, you know, mind games, and etc., and that's why he lost.
It was all a dream.
Yeah, but then things start to get a little weird, because he's like, oh, hold on, we found out that this is the church thing that's going on over there, and I need to go there. Eggsy, you stay in my apartment. So he was just there for 8 to 10 hours, just hanging out while he went to Tennessee or Kentucky or whatever. It was very weird.
That apartment was probably sick. There's probably a lot of cool stuff in there. Like, I could find something to do in that apartment for that long.
Yeah. And then after the church scene, he sees that whole thing streamed, and he's like, oh, no. And they're like, oh, crap. And so he goes to talk to Arthur, and then Arthur's been implanted, and it's like, when did that happen? What scene in the film did that occur in? But this is, I think, a really weird twist on it, because he is going to protect himself, and he's in it for himself, and, you know, agrees that humankind is a disease and they must be wiped out, and he does the whole like poison thing, and they do the switcheroo, which you can see coming from a mile away because the camera pans up to look at the stupid paintings, and they Michael Caine dies, and then he reveals to Merlin what has happened, and they're like, oh, well, this can't be fabricated because there's a push notification on his phone, so it has to be real, but we can't tell anybody, we better keep it between ourselves because we don't know who else could have been compromised. And then they go on their flight, and it's like, yeah, so there's no utility to this chip. I can't figure out what to do. It superheats the inside of somebody's skull, it makes them explode, but what do you do about that? Nothing. That definitely won't become an important thing that you could do later. But they also discover, you know, the neutralizing effect for the sound that gets emitted from the chips. Roxy has to go blow up the satellite with her hot air balloon thing. And I was actually kind of disappointed in how little she had to do in the film, comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
She goes to do that, and then she's just like, I'm going to hang out on this ice floe up here for a while, until you guys come pick me up, I guess. And that's all I can do. And it's like, oh, can you call my mom? And it's like, okay, I'll call your mom for you.
Well, I mean, the plan was for Eggsy to sneak in and stick a USB key into somebody's laptop and then leave. So he didn't really have much to do until they got stuck with the biometric security thing.
Yeah, I suppose. I was still expecting her to like swoop in, just be like, oh, I landed on the glacier just outside, but it didn't happen.
It's not a jetpack, it's a stupid old Bond reference with the what you call it thing with the rocket launcher.
Yeah, but so, you know, impressive underground lair and music and stuff and things. And we get, you know, his commitment to destroying the world and all the character stuff that's involved in that. And then they super blow up everybody's heads. And that is the weirdest part of this film. And I have to say, I don't love the choice to have that as well choreographed, differently colored mushroom clouds.
I like the music. I don't know why it had to be that weird color that it was. That part made no sense to me. There was a bit of humor, horrible, horrible humor to the exploding brains and music sinking.
Yeah, well, the color, it's hue more. But,
oh, God.
Yeah, and then also you got your pomp and circumstance. You gotta have that, because it was. And then a bunch of murdered people and world leaders and stuff. But it's okay, because that one prime minister guy was a jerk, and he locked up the princess. So who cares about him?
The bad people were trying to kill all of the innocent people, but as it turns out, all of the bad people died. And only some of the innocent people died because the machine got turned on. I did like that they didn't do the bomb thing of like, oh, stopped it right before it was about to go off. It's like, yeah. No, it literally went off and everyone around the world was killing each other and fighting for a good while before he was able to actually shut it off.
Yeah, and I like
that too.
I also like how they turned it back on too. Like, because it's the first time you're like, oh, they're out of it. And it's like, nope. It was like, you're going to go right back into action. And she is, the mother is full on... breaking down that door with the you know here's Johnny I was expecting, but it didn't happen.
How great was it that Sam Jackson had his workflow set up so when he put his hands down, like, there were pyro effects going off and a disco ball and music playing? Like,
that is some major smart home work. That home kit, those home kit integrations were off the charts.
I love that.
It's just like your house, right? When you walk in, Micah, you put your hand on the wall and then suddenly a disco ball drops down and Casey and the Sunshine Band starts playing.
that isn't the case yet, but it will be soon now. Nice. I'm inspired. I wonder about cave humidities. I'm sure it's probably fine. It's probably climate controlled.
Yeah. Although it is typically pretty humid inside of caves, but who knows what the HVAC system is inside of an evil lair.
You got a sick HVAC system.
Yeah. But then the final weird cherry on top is the princess scene where she'll let him do it in the tuchus if he shows up and saves the world, and he does that, and then
here's my problem with that. First of all, consensual butt sex, fine. Like the princess said, hey, you're cute, let's, but to end on like to go the end of the movie is like this way too long, I'm going to give you the code and then you're going to close the thing because I don't want to see any more of this because it would not be appropriate. Like, stop. I don't know why you had to end on that. Yeah. There's so many more like quirky things that we could have done instead of that. Like the rest of the movie, the most of the movie all the way through is super strange, super funny, and again, super strange. And then it's like, now we're going to do this sort of very... in a way pretty typical, like, the hero gets the girl, and I didn't care for that. No,
it was very I always wanted to have Christmas in July, but not with Denise Richards, but it was definitely hearkening back to the olden days of Bond, where it was just like, and then they snogged, and so it was it took me out a little bit because I just kind of rolled my eyes. I do like how the credits start and then we cut to the replica of the Colin Firth pub scene, only this time Eggsy is there to rescue his mother from the punks. And he does all the same stuff. Manners maketh the man, although he doesn't quite deliver it as Firthy as I would like. And then he Guinnesses somebody in the head with the thing.
Furthy, it's great because and Guinness.
All the guys behind him are just like, oh god, they're just having flashbacks from their amnesia that they're finally snapping out of. It's like, oh, I've heard this phrase before somewhere. This isn't going to end well. And he's just like, no, I wasn't here the first time, so I have no idea what's going on.
They even like start to interrupt him, like, he's like, ready to fight them, but they're like, oh god, this is not going to go well. Speaking of that scene, this is way earlier in the movie, but I have to touch on it because I thought of you, Joe, when this happened, and because I think this was you. You'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, but when they're first in the bar and Eggsy's hanging out with his mates and they are talking about that crew, one of his friends points across the bar at the people that they're talking about. And is this true? Don't I remember you, Joe, complaining about somebody pointing across a room?
Yes.
That happened, didn't it?
Yes. See, Dan does that and it drives me bonkers because
I hate when people point across a room.
Yeah. Oh, look at those jerks over there.
Convention center. Yeah. I was pointing across a convention center with a water bottle, but no, he will never let me live that down.
Look at that steak over there. I have to eat it.
Yeah. It's going to be me pointing at something and Joe wanting to start a fight and then me stealing his Subaru.
Only, are you going to drive backwards?
Sure, why not?
Okay, sure. I can't think of any reason.
I can drive a manual transmission.
Backwards?
Backwards, with a burrito in one hand.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. No, you need two hands for a manual transmission.
Oh.
But not two hands for a burrito?
I mean, a good burrito.
Yeah.
There you go. I immediately thought of that situation because that also, I'm like, no, people are going to see you pointing. And that's what happened. Like, the whole reason that everything else happened is because of that silly pointer.
Yeah. This whole movie could have been avoided if his friend didn't point at the Muppets, as he called them.
Yeah. So I have a question. Like I had said earlier, I don't understand when Arthur was turned. Did that happen before they were investigating Valentine, or did that happen after they started investigating Valentine? When did that occur in the film? Because it seems like if he had actually been turned, he would be like, oh yeah, let's forget about Valentine. Let's not worry about that at all. But he seems into it.
There was no collusion with Valentine.
I saw it as happening. So I saw it as, you know, Valentine's making his way around, making my way downtown, and he's finding people to turn, and he's going around, and then he discovers, you know, through his whole process or whatever, finally finding out like the Kingsman Secret Service, and there's the part where he's getting his suit in the tailor, and I feel like it's around that area where somehow he was able to, you know, meet Colin Firth, or not meet Colin Firth, but meet Michael Caine, get to Michael Caine's character, and communicate with him there and be like, okay, this actually makes sense. You should totally do that. Did that scene happen after that didn't happen after. That was before. Yeah, that was before. So that I think it was around the part where he found the Kingsman. Like, he actually was able to discover them. And then he's like, I'm going to go to the top of the charts and get this guy on my side. Dan, what do you think?
My guess would be, somewhere around there after there. But it most definitely would happen after he saw Colin Firth get shot in the face outside the church because, you know, best laid plans, they put their best guy on it and they lost. So he's really trying to cut his losses and make sure that he doesn't get his head blowed up in the New World Order. So I think after he saw Colin Firth die, he would definitely be like, get Valentine on the phone for me. I want to put one of those things in my head so I don't die. But it could have been before that. It could have been him just trying to hedge his bets and, you know, being kind of kept in the dark by Valentine the whole time. And then when Colin Firth died, he just sort of felt sad and like he was a traitor. And that's, you know, kind of what led to his end, but somewhere in there it's unclear, but I don't know. I think the death of Colin Firth would have pushed him towards it if he hadn't already been there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or did Colin Firth actually die?
Spoiler alert, for the next thing I was going to ask about. So this trailer for, the Golden Circle or the Gold Circle or whatever.
Full media blackout. Spoiler warning for people listening.
There was a trailer that was released. Trailer. So very briefly, since we've already gone over an hour and a half, what do you have to say about that trailer?
What do you have to say for yourself?
Yeah, because he's just there and he's got one eye covered up. So it's like, oh, so he was shot and didn't die. So he was just lying there bleeding for the rest of this film. In a coma, maybe? And nobody talked about him or addressed that? Because I had just assumed that he was dead. So then there's something just sort of odd about just seeing him pop up in the trailer. But I liked his character that he played. So I would look forward to seeing more of him.
I think it's going to be one of those Sherlock moments where, you know, everybody's trying to guess how Sherlock Holmes, this is the BBC show, that specifically, it's going to be them, you know, trying to figure out how he survived, and then he'll explain it, and it's going to be some very complex thing involving, I don't know, mathematics and umbrellas, and that's, you know, that'll be a part of the film, just to add a little bit of quirkiness to it, because ultimately, yeah, I am on board with the character still being alive, and certainly a moment of excitement that he did. And so you saw them both go like, how? And I do think that he's going to have his little, you know, Shakespearean monologue where he explains exactly how he survived and crawled out of there because a gentleman doesn't die.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you how he didn't die. If in this movie we are to believe that their custom tailored Savile Row suits are bulletproof, why would the lenses of their glasses not be bulletproof as well?
Oh, snap.
See, but the problem is, unfortunately, in this movie, there is a large blood spray that comes out the back of his head in that shot, which would have to be explained away. But I believe that he either like moved his face or Mr. Valentine just had a precise shot and hit him right in the eye. And I don't know if in the movie he's actually going to be fully missing that eye because he's got an eye patch on, or if he's just got a bruised eye, because you would have a bruised eye if you had a bulletproof lens over it and a bullet hit it. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. And then you got your statesman. You got your America.
I'm very excited about that. That's actually a very interesting kind of hilarious idea.
The lassos. The lassos are a little much.
Agreed.
I just love that you got, what's his name? You got Magic Mike in there, and he's kind of laughing the whole way through. He's like, yeah, we're American spies. It's kind of hilarious. And we got cowboy hats on.
Yeah. Channing Tatum. At least he's having fun. And then there's Jeff Bridges in the Michael Caine role. And then
This is my happy face.
Clarice.
Oh, wait, that's not him, is it?
No. Clarice is the bad guy. Second Clarice. So Julianne Moore is going to, you know, kill everybody or something with packages from her Amazon delivery drones. But it'd be interesting to watch.
Oh, boy.
It'd be good.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Basically, this whole series is a metaphor about how Silicon Valley is destroying the world.
Yeah. So does that mean we need to have Micah back on to discuss the sequel when it comes out in September?
Yes.
Yeah, we can reassess our food preferences and argue over our humidities again, and then we can... talk about the second one.
Yeah. I'll be expected to like steak, and one of you will be expected to hate it by that point.
I don't think you can make me hate steak.
Yeah. Kingsman and the Golden Corral. That'll fix your hatred of steak. Too much steak.
Before we wrap this up, though, we do need to do another assessment of our temperatures and humidities.
Oh.
It's true. Let me check in on this bad boy. I guess I could have asked Siri, because mine's a fancy HomeKit-enabled one. I've got 72 degrees holding steady, and my humidities remain at a just right 51%. Actually, that's on the low end of what I like to keep it at.
Oh, just rubbing it in.
Now I understand why Mike is okay with humidity, because he keeps it so cold inside. If it's under 75, you can get away with those humidities, but when it's like 80 degrees, you can't tolerate that.
Amen. I mean, as much as I am an advocate for like healthy humidity, I effing hate hot humidity. It's not that I hate hot weather, although, you know, Arizona's dry heat, I'm sure I would hate that as well. it's walking outside and it's only like 84 or something, but because it's so humid here, I just instantly turn into, I don't know, friggin' water element, and it's the absolute worst. It's not so much that I hate the heat, it's that I hate being a sticky, nasty ball of nonsense because of the fact that it's so humid outside.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yep. And Joseph? It's 40% humidity here and 92.3 degrees Fahrenheit.
Boy, yep. That is not good.
You're approaching body temperatures.
Yeah,
seriously. It is 41% humidity here, and I have gone up almost 3 degrees at 82.8 Fahrenheit.
82.8.
It is so unpleasant here. I don't know how Joe is alive.
I'm just holding out hope until the end when I can get some more cold water and turn on the AC.
Well,
lie down.
Let's say thank you to Micah now, and we can wrap this up. It was wonderful having you here. The merging of the two Joe Steele podcast properties.
Steel Industries. I thank you for having me. Genuinely, I absolutely enjoyed this. You know, I have been wanting to talk to you all about your food and your weather, and so it's a joy and a pleasure to be here to do that, and also talk about this movie that I do quite enjoy.
Yep,
it's a good movie. It's a good choice.
Yeah, thank you for being on and making me watch the thing that I kept meaning to do but not actually fulfilling it, but that was fun, and please come back.
Glad to cure your lazy.
Wow, well, I mean, that was a little harsh, but
you were the one that said it was because you were lazy, that's why you didn't watch it.
Let's not pick apart things that I said. Thank you for being on, Micah, and adios muchachos.
Adios, hasta luego, and goodbye.